Who controls the past, controls the future. Who controls the present, controls the past.
The death of bin Laden marks the most significant achievement to date in our nation's effort to defeat al-Qaeda.
All you gotta do is start looking around, start thinking for yourself, start investigating things, and you will see it all right there. So you have the power. Humanity has the power. We have the power. Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
As for me, give me liberty or give me death!
The answer to 1984 is 1776.
Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Jakari Jackson. Here's what we have in store for you for this May 20th, 2013 edition.
Tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, activist Adam Kokesh is being detained for allegedly assaulting a federal officer. Then, the DOJ formally accuses journalists of committing crimes. And a shotgun manufacturer is arrested in Denver as a terrorist. All that in Joel Skousen, coming up on the InfoWars Nightly News.
And welcome back. Top story headline, Obama DOJ formally accuses journalists in leaked case of committing crimes. Let's see what this article has to say. It is now well known that the Obama Justice Department has prosecuted more government leakers under the 1917 Espionage Act than all prior administrations combined. This obsessive fixation in defense of secrecy also targets and severely damages journalists specifically and the news gathering process in general. State Department advisor Kim did not obtain unauthorized access to classified information, nor steal documents, nor sell secrets, nor pass them to an enemy of the United States. Instead, he merely communicated his innocuous information to a journalist. But what makes this revelation particularly disturbing is that the DOJ, in order to get this search warrant, insisted that not only Kim, but also Rosen, the journalist, committed serious crimes. Under U.S. law, it is not illegal to publish classified information. And these are just the things we're seeing more and more. It seems like every day, I think there's like two or three guys from Fox News, guys from the AP, all being hit with these orders, these sanctions. You can't report this. We saw Amber Lyon, who we had on the show, actually walked out of CNN over just such things. Well, not just such things, but under censorship from her network. And we see this censorship by the government. The government has secrets that they don't want to get out. And for more on that, we're going to go to our next article. Activists rally to free Adam Kokesh. Now, how does this tie into our last article? Adam Kokesh is planning an armed march in Washington, D.C. on July 4th. And just so happens he happened to be at a marijuana rally. Not partaking, but just there. And he got arrested and harassed by the officials at that event. As the video documenting Kokesh's arrest proves, he was not smoking marijuana when he was snatched by the cops, nor did he resist arrest. Kokesh's crime seems to amount to no more than exercising his right to free speech under the First Amendment. And you saw the video right there. He was not resisting the cops. I mean, he was letting them throw him around like a rag doll, but, you know, he wasn't resisting. You know, guys were grabbing all over him and all kinds of things going up. But it was good that his crew was there and people had a chance to film it. And speaking of filming, I had a chance to go out in the streets of Austin last week, and I filmed some people and their responses to late-term abortions. Jakari Jackson for InfoWars.com. Now, we're down here on South Congress, very trendy part of the city, as Alex likes to call it. And we're going to ask people how they feel about late-term abortions. For those who don't know, that's abortions up to age 3. You know, of course, I don't believe in that kind of thing, but we're just going to see what the people have to say.
All right, Matt.
Excuse me. I'm with the group supporting a woman's right to choose, particularly in the third term. I'm just trying to get a couple of signatures so we can support a woman's rights. Do you guys have a second? I mean, you don't have to put your full name. You just put, you know, your zip code. No.
Woman's right
to choose, particularly in the third term. Excuse me. Hey, bro, I'm supporting a woman's right to choose, particularly in the third term. Do you have a second? A woman's right to choose, particularly in the third term, you know, because we have a lot of kids that are born with mental disabilities, physical disabilities, and, you know, sometimes the families can't take care of them.
I gotta go to work.
Okay, appreciate you, bro.
because we agree with the Journal of Medical Ethics. They talk about how children...
Abortion?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Particularly in the late term, because some people, they have problems taking care of their children. Some children have medical disabilities, lack of finances, and so forth. We agree with the Journal of Medical Ethics when they say that, you know, you should have the right to do what you need to do. Excuse me, guys. It's a point of a woman's right to choose in the third term. Do you guys have any thoughts about that? You don't have to put your full name. You don't have to put your address. It's just up to age three. You guys okay with that?
Thanks.
All right, thanks. Not just for a woman's right, but for the family's rights, the community's rights. If you take a whole community to raise a child. So if you guys, you know, just have, you know, a second, you don't have to put your full address.
I don't really support it.
What about early term? You think that's okay?
Yeah, I think early term is okay, but third term.
I mean, it's just up to age three. Excuse me, guys. What's the point of a woman's right to choose in the late term?
Oh, we only signed for one of those.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Was it in the late term up to age three?
Something like that.
Okay, thank you. Are you okay with that? Just age three.
Age three?
Yeah.
I thought we were talking about abortion.
I mean, it's called late term abortion. Hi, excuse me. I'm supporting a woman's right to choose. Do you have any thoughts about that, particularly in the late term?
I would give my opinion, but we have to go back home. I'm sorry.
All right, it's only up to age three.
What do you mean?
I mean, right to choose up to age three.
Okay. I don't really have a strong opinion.
Okay. I mean, you can decide. You don't have to believe
okay,
in it wholeheartedly. Okay, great. In the Journal of Medical Ethics, you know, they're saying that, you know, some children are born and they have disabilities and other things. You know, some families can't take care of them. So they said, you know, just up to age three, maybe we can, you know, help the families out and help them with their situation, you know.
Yeah.
Because we don't need any kids that, you know, can't take care of themselves and, you know, enjoy life, you know, so.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
If you can't support them, you know, I think it's best, you know, what's right for the family.
You could decide it earlier.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me, guys. Yes. I'm supporting a woman's right to choose, particularly in the late term. If you guys have a second, just fill this out. You don't have to put your full address or anything like that. But, you know, we agree with the Journal of Medical Ethics. It says, you know, a family should be able to do what it needs to do, you know, for the right, what's right for the family. Because you have so many children born with medical disabilities and families that can't really take care of them. So we just support
pro-abortion?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I personally cannot.
You can't?
Yeah.
What about you, sir? Okay, thank you, sir. Hi, excuse me, miss. I'm supporting a woman's right to choose.
I'm pro-life, darling.
All right, thank you.
Heartbeats and bright ways. Heartbeats and bright ways.
All right. Excuse me, miss. I'm supporting a woman's right to choose in the late term.
In the late term? Okay.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Good. All right.
Just need a signature, no money?
Yes, no money. You don't have to put your full address. You can put your zip code. Can we agree with the Journal of Medical Ethics? It says, you know, maybe up to age three.
I was a pediatric social worker for 36 years in Brooklyn. You're talking to the...
Oh, good. Talking, preaching to the choir. Great.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, so, I mean, we definitely would appreciate your support. And we may be back out here next week talking about vaccines and such. A lot of people don't want to get their kids vaccinated. I'm sure you've encountered a lot of that.
From Park Slope, Brooklyn, all the time.
All the time. All right, thank you. Keep up a good fight. Excuse me, guys. I'm supporting a woman's right to choose in the late term. And what by the late term? Oh, you ready? Great. And you don't have to put your full address. You can just put your zip code. And, you know, we agree with the Journal of Medical Ethics. It says, you know, maybe up to age three, we want women to have the right to choose what's right for them, not just for them, but for their families, you know, because there's a lot of kids born with disabilities and families that can't really take care of them. So we just want everybody to have the right to do what's right for them. Definitely appreciate it. I don't know if you guys hang out here a lot, but we may be back next week trying to educate people about vaccines and so forth. There's a lot of people don't want to give them to their kids. There's a lot of rumors and conspiracy theories that they contain things like mercury. So I definitely appreciate you guys stopping and keep up a good fight. Thank you. How you doing, guys? Out here supporting a woman's right to choose?
Oh, yeah. I love abortions.
All right. Great. How you doing? I'm out here supporting a woman's right to choose, particularly in the late term. You have the right idea, late term, because we agree with the Journal of Medical Ethics. They say that, you know, maybe up to age three, but they want a family to be able to choose what's right for them.
Got it. I'm not sure.
You don't have to put your full address. You can put your zip code. And you can use, you know, if your name is Susie, you can go by Sue.
We'll be going back. Well, let me think about that.
All right.
Okay, thank you. And do you know a place for fish tacos?
Hey, excuse me, ladies. I'm out here supporting a woman's right to choose, particularly in the third term.
Okay.
Late term.
Do you sign?
Yeah, sure. You don't have to put your full address. You can just put your name and maybe a nickname. Yeah, we agree with the Journal of Medical Ethics. They say that, you know, a family should have the right to choose what's right for them up to age 3.
Okay.
So we definitely appreciate it. We may be out here next week trying to educate people. Thank you, too. Trying to educate people about vaccines because a lot of people don't want to give them to their kids and also
right.
fluoridated water and stuff. We just want people to know to, you know, do what's best for them and their families.
Okay, awesome.
Definitely appreciate you guys
no
taking
problem.
The time out today. This is really great.
Good luck getting more
seniors.
Thank you. Now, what you just saw was about 15 minutes worth of work. I believe we collected 3 or 4 signatures standing in one spot, people walking by. Most people weren't really interested in what a late-term abortion actually was. I did try to explain it to them the best I could. I told them about the Journal of Medical Ethics, saying, hey, this is a great deal. The people I was most surprised were, first, the young lady who was actually carrying a child on her back. I don't know if that was her daughter or not. I was very surprised she signed it. And also the lady who turned out to be a nurse who knew all about late-term abortions, didn't have to tell her anything. She just jumped up and signed for it. So that's where we are now in society, late-term abortions up to age 3, and everybody thinks it's great. Jakari Jackson for InfoWars.com. So a very surprising thing for me to find people, especially like that young lady who had the child on her back, to say they would support such a deal. Very surprising to me, but that's the city of Austin. We'll move on now. NYPD cops arrest woman recording them, apparently stealing wrong memory card. We were arrested, these are the words of the lady, while filming an NYPD checkpoint on a bridge between the soon-to-be gentrified Bronx and the quickly gentrifying Harlem. We were charged with OGA, misconduct, and resisting arrest. I was holding a bag of yarn in one hand and a canvas bag in the other. My partner had food in his hand and was tackled. I guess he wasn't carrying GMO. Even though their violent actions were unjust, we did not resist. Simultaneous with our, quote, arrest, the checkpoints were closed down. We were held for 25 hours. Now, these are the checkpoints that are popping up all over in the city of Austin. They do the no-refusal DUI checkpoint weekends. In cities such as San Antonio, they do those year-round when they can just pull you over, draw your blood without your consent. But luckily, people are recording these kind of things, and they're rallying against them. And speaking of rallying, Leanne McAdoo has a report, special report, on the rally, the March Against Monsanto.
I'm Leanne McAdoo, and this is an InfoWars Nightly News Alert. Monsanto CEO Hugh Grant accused anti-GMO activists of being reverse elitists for insisting that there should be traditional agriculture or organic food and nothing else. Grant said in a Bloomberg interview he'd feel a whole lot better if opponents marinated a bit on where the extra chickens are going to come from or who's going to grow the new bushel. Basically saying protesters aren't playing fair by stirring up opposition toward his company through social media and with the upcoming March Against Monsanto. Well, perhaps if Monsanto wasn't bankrupting small-time farmers over patent infringement or suing dairy farmers who dare label their milk RBGH-free, critics wouldn't have to wonder where their food will come from. But Grant says there's space in the supermarket shelf for all of us. Monsanto has effectively purchased the approval of much of Washington, with ex-Monsanto execs steering government agencies like the FDA and the Supreme Court. The passing of the Monsanto Protection Act puts the biotech company above the law by banning the courts from stopping the sale, planting, harvesting, or distribution of GM crops, even if those crops are later linked to illness or environmental problems. But the political favoritism extends even further. Food and Water Watch reviewed State Department cables proving that the United States government lobbied foreign nations on behalf of the biotech giant. Monsanto pays millions of dollars a year lobbying politicians, silences scientific research findings of their products, denies consumers the right to GM food labeling, and now we know that millions of our taxpayer dollars are being spent to advance their company's agenda worldwide. Yet Grant says it's the anti-GMO activists armed only with their Facebook statuses who aren't playing fair. Due to all of the activism surrounding the Monsanto Protection Act, U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon has announced an amendment that will remove the act from the spending bill. To share this and other stories with your friends, visit InfoWars.com/listen for a variety of ways to spread the info war. I'm Leanne McAdoo, and this has been an InfoWars Nightly News Alert.
So great report by Leanne McAdoo, and also be sure to check out her special report on Infowars.com. We move on now. Feds want to lower limits and criminalize alcohol consumption. This ties into the what I was just talking about a second ago with the no-refusal DUI checkpoints. In a move proponents believe will have no measurable effect on public safety, the National Transportation Safety Board is urging state governments to lower the allowable limit for drivers from 0.8 to 0.05. Even MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, the most vocal anti-drunk driving group in the world, would rather pursue other options. And the article goes on to say that back in 2010, a report came out that said about 33,000 traffic fatalities, and out of those, only about 10,000 or so involved a blood alcohol level of above 0.08%. So it doesn't really seem to be that measurable of a deal. Even MAD says it's probably not going to help all that much. It's just another thing to get you into the system, and I don't personally even drink. I definitely don't endorse drinking and driving, but I don't really think this is going to be that measurable of a difference either. It's just another thing to get you in the system, like getting felony charges for releasing balloons. You guys saw that article out of Florida. And we'll move on now to our last story of the night. Now, this is a guy who got in the system for a very stupid reason. Denver cops arrest Italian shotgun manufacturer as a terrorist. The Daniel Perazzi was arrested on Saturday after a cab driver turned him into police as a terrorist. The Perazzi shotgun executive was taken into custody by Adams County deputies outside the Denver, Colorado gun collector show and was held over the weekend. The cab driver notified law enforcement he suspected he had a terrorist in his cab when they were waiting to intercept him, evidently oblivious to the fact that he was arriving at a highly publicized gun show. I mean, one of the biggest gun shows in the country, especially for antiques and specialty firearms that he made. And this guy is a terrorist because he's riding around with a few shotguns. See something, say something. You see it right there in the cab. This snitch culture that's in the world today, especially in the state of Colorado, where they're trying to push through some very heavy legislation and even try to do so. And that does it for the news portion of our program. Now, stay tuned after this break. We'll be back with Alex Jones interviewing Joel Skousen. But first, let's go to our quote of the day. This from John Adams. When people talk of freedom of writing, speaking, or thinking, I cannot choose but to laugh. No such thing ever existed. No such thing exists now. But I hope it will exist. But it must be hundreds of years after you and I shall write and speak no more. That by John Adams. A very, very deep quote. Good job on that one, John Bound. So we'll be back right after this break with Alex Jones and Joel Skousen.
Our viewers have demanded it, so now you're going to get it. More pro Second Amendment gun shows in the month of June.
What we've learned is you cannot hide behind an I-beam when there's a 50 cal present.
Brothers in Arms, 50 cal ammo review, and more. Coming in the month of June to the InfoWar.
While we fight to retain our liberty, while we fight to expose globalism, we have to realize we're talking about a very powerful combination of power.
Renowned author and expert Joel Skousen breaks down the globalist plan to shut down America and stage a new world war.
In one day, America will go from day to night. And if you haven't prepared in advance, there's not enough time to prepare in 24 hours, even if you saw it that early.
Coming to the InfoWar in November is our new documentary film presentation.
Strategic relocation is a systematic way to think strategically in the future about how do I safeguard.
Joel Skousen, Strategic Relocation.
The freeways are going to be crowded. They're going to run out of gasoline. They're going to run out of food. And then they're going to start to go north and south of those freeways.
Joel Skousen is renowned as one of the world's foremost experts in strategic relocation and the securing of your home.
We talk about natural disasters. the health environment. We talk about pollution, the water quality. My personal experience about being in every one of these states.
Government is digging in for the organized, incremental collapse of society and world war.
The U.S. isn't building huge underground bases and bunkers because of some terrorist threat. They know that a massive nuclear attack is coming. They want that attack to come. Most people won't even be ready and won't be able to get out of town when any of these nuclear weapons fall, because there'll be absolute panic.
There is no preparedness without strategy.
What I tell people is that you do have time. Prepare wisely in advance.
This Christmas, give the gift of preparedness. Strategic Relocation, the film, with Joel Skousen and Alex Jones.
Hello, this is Hank Hill, and I'm telling you what, you need to listen to Alex Jones.
Infowars.com.
Judge, what is the secret of the universe?
Infowars.com.
Well, he's back by popular demand. It was a year ago, roughly, that Joel Skousen, the editor-in-chief at World Affairs Brief, flew to Austin, Texas, so that we could film the documentary Strategic Relocation here at the Infowars.com studios that accompanies his third edition of his best-selling book, Strategic Relocation. He's also the author of The Secure Home, the number one bestseller when it comes to secure homes for the last several decades. And I wanted to get him back here today to get into some of the geopolitical developments happening around the world, because he has great insight into that, and we found it to be extremely accurate in the past. But first, to get into the fact that strategic relocation is something that pretty much anybody out there can do. Now, does that mean that you can go to the very safest spot from his decades of research all over the country? No. But there's always things you can do in any region to increase your overall safety. And some people say, oh, you're being, you know, fearful. Well, government is digging in. They're building bunkers. They're moving to certain areas they believe are secure. They're building underground seed vaults. They're buying billions of bullets and 7,000 anti-mine tanks and armored vehicles. So the national security state is digging in on record and saying the terror threat isn't Al-Qaeda anymore, who they publicly run in Libya and Syria and other areas. It's conservatives, libertarians, Christians, gun owners in the Fed groups, basically real Americans. Anybody that's informed, dialed in, and cares about freedom, we're the enemy. John Wayne would be the enemy today. And this over-the-top attack on liberty is actually an opportunity for us to reach out to our fellow Americans and people across the world and really point out how absurdist all of this has gotten. So again, when I say that you should try to move to an area that's safer, I'm not saying we should give up. We should have offense and defense, a offensive position, but also a defensive position. And I've been following Joel Skousen's work for about 15 years, but I have to tell you, I'd already chosen where I wanted to live in Central Texas, the safest area, before I read his book and found from my own research exactly what was then in his book. And other areas that I've traveled to reading his book, he has intimate understanding of it. So he's not just, you know, spewing a bunch of bull here. He has built secure homes and other facilities all over the United States and other parts of the world. And so that's why he is probably the leading expert in this field. There's differences of opinion out there by other top survivalists and redoubt builders, but they all respect each other and respect the work of Joel Skousen. And the reason I go into that long intro is because you need to understand that even when you research all the time, it's important to go to specialists on specific areas because the world is such a complex system, and it's not just wide, it's also very, very deep. So whether you live in the Northeast or the South or the Southwest or the Midwest or the Pacific Northwest or Southern California or those areas or the mountain region of the Rockies,
there are sub-regions and sub-areas that are more preferable. And it may just be a 20-mile difference. And so that's why this message is for everybody out there. Even if you can't leave Lower Manhattan, still thinking about being prepared puts you one step or two steps or three steps past others. And so that's why Joel Skousen joins us with an update on the film Strategic Relocation and the book Strategic Relocation, third edition, which are both available at InfoWarsStore.com, I should add, or by calling 888-253-3139. And when you watch the film or you read the book, it puts you into that battle space of really shaping the battlefield. And life is a battle. Life is a testing ground. Joel, great to have you back in studio with us. Thanks for flying commercially here to Austin, Texas, and congratulations on surviving that one in a million malfunction plane crash you had as well.
Well, I thank God for that. I walked away even though the seatbelt broke and the airplane was totally destroyed. I walked away with barely a scratch. So it was amazing.
Yeah, you've certainly got some angels there, my friend.
Yes, I, you know, when that seatbelt broke, I expected to be flying out of the cockpit, and I hit nothing. My glasses ended up 200 feet away, but I didn't go anywhere. Explain that.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I could ask the questions, but you're the expert here. First off, and then get into the updates, because some of the things have been upgraded, some right. downgraded from last time we were here in the U.S. The film also breaks down the rest of the world, and so does the book. But specifically, people that say, hey, I can't move to the middle of nowhere. I can't go where Joel's saying. There's bullseye zones in the dartboard, but there's also areas that are, you know, better than the absolute fringes.
Well, you know, Alex, this is what, in all the feedback I've gotten back over the years, the things that people most like about this book is that it isn't about just one safe area. It isn't about a redoubt where everybody else is dead and you only survive if you get to that. That's very discouraging news. And in fact, people can survive almost anywhere if they follow my specific criteria of where to specifically locate in the areas. I can find safe areas, relatively safe areas, even in zero-rated states. And I rate every state in the union here from 1 to 5, or from 0 to 5.
Florida's a 0.
Florida's a 0, Hawaii's a 0, and New Jersey's a 0. And now that doesn't mean that you cannot survive there. It just means that you have to take extra precautions. Because the forces against you and against liberty are so high, the lack of places to hide, the tyranny of government, all of those things impinge upon you. And it also reduces the amount of time you can expect to survive in a long-term crisis. In other words, you can do fine in the short term, and you may extend it to the medium term, but these zero states in a long-term crisis of total social order for several years, you're going to need to move. And that's one of my messages. A lot of people say, well, I can't move. Because of why? Well, because I'm tied to a job. Well, let me tell you, if there's nuclear war and total social unrest, there isn't going to be a job. So at some point, you're not going to be tied to that area with a job. Now, I am very sympathetic as a relocation consultant, and I've dealt with hundreds of people over the years, and I found safe places for people who can't leave. But I do tell them, at the end of all this process, if you're in certain areas like the L.A. Basin or the New York, New Jersey, you know, high-density population, at someday you're going to have to be walking out of that area.
Absolutely. Well, listen,
yeah.
I'll interrupt incessantly if I don't turn it over to you. So look right in there into the camera. I guess that's the camera you're on, or right over here. Right over there, Joel, you take over and give people a presentation and a update on this.
But what I want to point out is the great value of the book is that I give specific recommendations in every state of the union about where to find safety if you have to stay in that area. For example, in California here, which is a very popular state, that people go to, you know, I do give a summary of all of the general threats that I discuss generally, where you rate states according to their gun laws and their homeschooling laws and their medical laws and their population density and the climate and the growing ability. Then I give a synopsis in every state about how each state rates in every one of those areas. And this is very, very valuable in a nutshell to see exactly where the states rates. And then I list all of the weapons and actual target areas in an area so that you know. When you coordinate that with the color map of the area, you have the target areas and all of the difficulties on the map. But this is the most important area, or the general notes about each state, where I give my general analysis from my experience personally having lived or worked in these areas. And then we have city-specific strategies, meaning every single metropolitan area where most people have to stay and live, I give specific strategies where to relocate if you need to relocate locally so you can stay in the area to avoid the massive outflows of people in a social unrest situation, or where the mountains and other things shield you from nuclear targets. So you see we have the Bay Area. I cover San Francisco, Oakland, Central California, San Diego, Los Angeles, and other major areas, Sacramento, where to locate relative to those things. And then I give specific retreat potential areas in every state where you'll find your actual best retreat. So in Ohio, I tell you the rural areas that are best, as well as if you have to be around Cleveland, how to avoid certain areas, where the threats are going to come from, and where to maneuver. This is very valuable material for people who cannot relocate.
And briefly, tell them how you discovered all this, because I found it so accurate. Everywhere I go in the country, I've taken the book with me, and you really get the essence of the people. You look at the laws. I mean, how did you do this?
Well, a lot of the credit goes to my son, Andrew, who helped me do this third edition. He did a lot of the research on all this, and we literally had to redo all of the data from the previous editions because it had become outdated. But I have the experience of having worked in every state of the union and having designed homes, and so I know the terrain. I also have developed, because of that experience, I mean, I haven't been in every square foot of every state, but I have, knowing when I went into Ohio that here this well has a lot of sulfur smell and other things, it alerted me to the fact that even rural safe areas have liabilities. And so we went and searched out the water quality in the various areas, created maps for this book on how to do that. But I also developed criteria that there was a certain understanding, and I tried to teach people that. If you move into an area, I can teach people how to look where the retreat routes, where most flows of people are going to go in the primary and the secondary, when the freeways get cut off, and they may be stopped by federal authorities in order to allow for troop movements, for example. I developed these principles about how to develop and predict where the flows are going to go, and in addition, how to get sufficiently far away, how to determine the criteria about how far people pillage. We learned that from the World War II situation where Germans were getting on the highways, fleeing the Russian troops, and they pillaged.
How to take the road less traveled.
That's right. The road less traveled, and how to avoid the fact that if you're traveling after a mob that has left a city, everything's going to be pillaged clean up to a mile on either side. And over a 2 or 3 week period of they'll get out to 2 to 3 miles, and over a month of refugee flow, they'll get out to 5 miles. But after 5 miles, hardly any of the farms got touched. And so that tells you something. That you
be 5 miles from any major road.
Well, and it isn't. It's
major arteries.
That's right, major arteries. And when you get to secondary roads, you can be within a mile of them. In fact, you can even be within half a mile if you've got sufficient tree cover so that nobody can see it and isn't an obvious driveway.
So if you're like over a hill, down a dip.
That's right.
In fact, guys, do me a favor. Will somebody get my keys out of the other studio and go in my car? In the floorboard of the passenger seat is today's paper. I bought it this morning, read the story, didn't bring it. Later I want to show viewers just a microcosm example of this. The cover of the paper, and I read the article, said that Austin's one of the richest cities in the country now in this depression/recession. And that as that happens, we have the second largest influx of poor. So there's kind of a time-lapse example. As the country gets worse and worse, the few wealthy cities have the poor flooding into it in kind of a bizarre form of pillaging. Mm-hmm. And then I saw statistics. Austin's down in the top 10 for petty crime. They're scared of getting shot coming in your house, but they'll knock out your window, steal your purse, grab your iPhone, walking down the street. As the country collapses, they're all racing into Austin. And of course, that's another form of pillaging, a soft pillaging. But it just shows when things collapse, people that have been prepared are the main targets.
And it also shows that our demographics in our country are changing. It's not 11 million illegal aliens. It's 20 to 25 million illegal aliens. And they're increasing at, let me tell you this, the Border Patrol has just reported that they're catching and deporting over 1,000 a day more than what they used to because of this amnesty that's looming. It's just a flood coming across the border. So the Democrats are, demographics are changing, and they're getting worse.
And the Democrats will get their voters to take the guns.
That's right. I mean, this is what the multicultural agenda is all about, is watering down the vote, changing the vote. That's why Colorado, and I might say that there have been some strategic events in this country in the past 6 months that have changed the ratings in the book. That doesn't mean it's out of date, because we are continually updating this book every new printing, and they're getting printed very fast because they're in bestseller status. But every new printing has changes. The latest printing, for example, downgrades Connecticut one level, one number. It downgrades Colorado one number and New York one number because of this gun control. These three states have changed. I have no less than three consulting clients that are leaving Connecticut because of passing a gun ban. They are required to get rid of their assault rifles within 6 months. And so we have people shipping weapons out, and I've had no less than two calling me and saying, where can I ship my weapons? And where can I relocate fast? So there are reasons.
And companies and corporations, just like corporations leave countries that become tyrannical, this is something governments and elites do, and you're trying to just give them top-level consulting on what individuals can do. But again, the media is like, oh, it's so crazy to worry about where you are. Let us just rob you. Here's the article. The guy's got it really quick. Poverty grows fast in suburbs. Austin second to Atlanta in rate of increase in poor, authorities say. And then admits in the full article that they're migrating here because of the low taxes and the wealth, but that it's putting this giant weight. So this is, again, you're talking about in a total collapse what happens to areas. This, though, is in slow motion.
That's right. There are gradual demographic changes, and that's why I mentioned the increase in illegal aliens. It's loading up the lower southern states with more and more Mexican immigrants. You're going to have more load on welfare, and that's a lot of the poverty that's moving into there are just what I'm talking about.
More because illegals, Mexico has collapsed.
More illegals coming in here.
We have a failed
and we're
state.
And we're attracting them, and we're offering free services. I mean, this is incredible. Not only that, you cannot underestimate what this amnesty bill is going to do, because not only is it giving amnesty to every one of the 20 million that are offered.
But their families.
But their families as well, and it's got a loophole then for Homeland Security that they can waive the if you've been deported, you can't qualify. They can waive any one of those. They can waive the requirement that you've got a criminal record. In other words, they can literally open the doors to
this
everyone.
Is the end of America. And they will use these groups who are fleeing globalist tyranny, can't blame them, they will use it to fully, I mean, that is the plan, to just radically connect now socialism to the whole agenda.
We've also had in the news at the time that we're doing this interview about horrific tornadoes in the main tornado alley within the United States, Oklahoma, Texas. And there have been terrific tornadoes even in the South the last 2 years. So they are increasing. But I noticed in the news a story today when I was just eating my breakfast before I came over here about a family that had survived a tornado barely because the top had blown off their shelter. Now they'd got in, they had a tornado shelter, and people who did not have a shelter literally died or fled, and there's a lot of deaths involved in these tornadoes. But those that made it in the shelter, some of those shelters lost their roof. That's because the typical shelter in the Midwest has a metal roof on it, a tin roof, and it's just a hole in the ground that's got concrete and then a metal roof on it. It shows you that you really need to take better care if you're going to shelter in place, whether it's for to create a safe room, whether it's against fallout, or whether or not it's against tornadoes. And those of you who have homes in Tornado Alley or anywhere where there can be
have
the excuse to build a safe room and say it's a tornado shelter, but put a concrete roof on it. Because then it serves not only as a fallout chamber, but it also serves against tornadoes, and the roof isn't coming off even in 200 or 300 mile an hour winds. So that's a lesson to be learned that people need to be aware of.
Amazing. And again, I feel so sad for Latin America and all the things that have gone on down there. But I've been there many times. That's scary. You've lived down there. And now it's just like, hey, let's totally, you know, open up America to this. Why do the globalists want to fully collapse the country? Because if they do that, I mean, it's going to really, really bankrupt things. I guess they're loaning out fiat money, so why does it matter?
Well, in fact, they gave every sign that they're not going to collapse it economically immediately. I think they want to wait until they can scoot this collapse in under the cover of war. And that's about 8 to 10 years away before they're ready.
Sure, but when I say collapse, I mean the states, bankrupt the states with...
Yes, because but most of the time that's meant to federalize the states and to
sure,
bail
collapse them
it.
Into
that's
globalism,
right.
Yeah.
And it's just like I'm expecting, and this is why there's a big boost in the stock market going up past 15,000. It's just ridiculous with an economy that's stagnant. It means that all of the bailout money is going into the speculative economy. The major banks have money to throw in. The hedge funds have money to throw into ballooning the stock market. But it's going to crash. Now, it won't crash all the way to the bottom like 1929, but even a 30% would cause such a loss in the pensions funds that I think that will give the government the excuse to nationalize pensions in as part of the bailout, to bail out pensions.
Oh, yeah, they're having the congressional hearings about that.
So every crisis will be used to consolidate federal power, but actual tyranny, the kind of crisis that will cause the collapse of civilization, I think will wait until war comes, because then they walk away scot-free. They walk away coming out of their bunker saying, we're here to save you. And we didn't, you know, it's not our fault. The Russians deceived us. They lied to us. You know, sure, there are these people like Joel Skousen who said, we knew about this and we covered for the Russians. But we ought to lock those people up. We're the champions of the military complex and prosecuting this war that's coming out. So my view, though, is that there are two major issues you need to look at in terms of strategic relocation. One, if you can move or if you can't move. If you can move, you need to look at the way that society is moving quite rapidly towards tyranny. You don't want to be in Boston after the Boston Marathon spectacle of militarization of the police. You saw more military vehicles come out of that city than I ever realized were in any city of the United States. I mean, there were tens of these armored vehicles, and there were SWAT teams that had more uniforms than I ever thought was capable in the Boston area. This was an object lesson to us that they are building these facilities, not using them until they have to, and they will surprise you how much they have been preparing for martial law, preparing for the takedown of domestic cities.
And they use a false flag like this as a dress rehearsal.
That's right. And it was a dress rehearsal, and people failed that dress rehearsal by completely succumbing. No one challenging the military about why you need to drive us out of our house at gunpoint and tell us to lie down on the ground. Totally uncalled
for. It's about we're all suspects, they're the good guys. And then it turns out the two guys are really FBI, CIA, protected. So
what I'm saying, though, Alex, is that people ought to wake up from that and say, I don't want to live in the Boston metro area anymore if that's what's going to happen. I mean, this is tyranny waiting to happen, and almost every major metro has that kind of militarization of police that's going on. And it's been sold to us in the terms of SWAT teams for drug busts and going against gangs. But when they pulled out that much, we know that it's for domestic control.
Well, the training manual will say that.
Yeah.
It's for libertarians and Christians and conservatives.
And so I think it ought to accelerate people's desire to know that they should retreat. And, you know, it's amazing how many people have told me I can't relocate. When I really investigate it, whether or not they can, I'm finding it's more convenient. It's inconvenient for me to relocate. But a lot of people can. Now, I'm not saying, because I do believe we have some time for people to make these, they don't have to rush out like in Y2K and relocate, quit their job, and then starve to death because they broke their financial lifeline. That was a big problem with people relocating without proper preparation in Y2K. But they do have time to do this. But people can transfer within companies. They can transfer within industries where they still have credentials. I know it's a tough job market, but it is starting to come back. Not a true recovery, but an inflationary recovery. And so there are more opportunities, and people don't have to make the decision 6 months or even a year from now, but they have to keep looking. I keep telling people, you have two choices. You can leave now when it's inconvenient, or you will walk away from the city when there's no job and there's total social unrest. At some point, you're going to be leaving it. So,
now you talk about multiple redoubts. I mean, I could move from the middle of Austin to 25 miles outside on the edge of the Texas Hill Country, but then I can use maybe someplace else, because I haven't done that yet, as a real backup that's further out. Where would that be?
Well, that really gets into this, where is real safety? And real safety is where you've really got good growing potential, because there's going to be famine in this country when war starts someday. It may last for up to 2 years before supply lines start to get reestablished and things. So you've got to have growable territory. But unfortunately, a lot of the easy growable territory in the Midwest is not safe, or it's susceptible to a lot of influx of Easterners who will be fleeing the East. There's too many people for people even to grow crops in the East, because literally they'll have tens of people surrounding those crops and stealing them before they even get ripe. You've got to be rural enough where you can grow crops without the defense. You know, you don't have to be shooting people who are just starving. It's one thing. I don't mind shooting a person who's a criminal or somebody who's aggressive, who's going to try to use force against my family. But I'm not going to shoot people who are just literally starving. And unfortunately, you can't reason with them when they're starving or control them. You've got to be rural enough.
So that's right. Studies show that even with very moral Christian groups in Europe and in multiple wars, and let's face it, we're pretty immoral on average compared to them, and they wouldn't put up with abortion and stuff back then, that within 7 days, people start robbing. 10 days, they start killing. 15 days, 90%+ of people begin eating other humans. Cannibalism. You've seen those Pentagon studies, I'm sure. I mean, what have you seen from your own studies on that?
Well, I was in Uruguay when this aircraft went down in the Andes, and these were soccer players. These were tough individuals, and they began cannibalism. They had to. And they had the same problems about, am I going to die or am I going to eat this compatriot who just froze to death? And they started to eat, and they survived. And so it isn't necessarily the ultimate evil, but certainly the social unrest is different, because you have people preying on one another, and even good people, for the sake of their children who are starving, are forced to go rob and steal or do anything or break in to find some food.
Why are we having to look at societal breakdown? Because it's more than the globalists shelling off all our infrastructure in the Panama Canal and giving weapon systems to the communist Chinese and the Russians. And why is the government digging in? I mean, obviously we know these answers, but explain to some of the new viewers, why is it important to get prepared? I mean, bare minimum water filters, storable foods, firearms, things like that.
Well, the government is digging in because of nuclear war. That's the only reason I emphasize that they're digging in, is because nuclear war brings absolute chaos and social unrest. Because it's preceded 20 minutes in advance with an EMP strike, which takes down the grid, there will be social unrest within 3 days after the grid going completely down. There'll be no help coming from anywhere else. And that's why people have to prepare. Look at, even if you have to stay within society, you get caught there so that you can't leave when this crisis hits. You've got to be able to hunker down in your house, in a concealed safe room, with food storage, with water, and eventually with electricity when it's safe to come out and
start. Sure, but
my
point is, what are the geopolitical factors of why the rich and the elite are all getting ready while telling us not to get ready? Why would they not want to tell us to get ready?
Well, the main reason for that is because they want the maximum amount of panic to force people to join the New World Order as their salvation when they come out of their bunkers. They want the maximum
panic. Just like they stage terror attacks to get us to give up liberties.
That's right. But they want panic so that...
Why are they building underground UN seed bunkers?
Because there is going to be a major destruction of the infrastructure, and we have GMO seeds almost excluded. There are predators. Monsanto is a predator upon society, so that it is actually suing farmers for saving their own seeds, or even when GMO crops go over and contaminate their property, they're suing them as if they were stealing GMO seeds.
Mega predator.
They are trying to stop stop the production of heritage seeds. Even though they won't completely do that, we are losing so many heritage seeds because people aren't using them.
And Monsanto infects them.
That's right. And they have hybrid seeds. Almost everything you buy in the store is a hybrid seed, and they're not going to reproduce themselves properly. There's going to be famine. There's going to be starvation. And they will control the entire process by being able to bring out of the seed bank the stuff to restart society. And there will be controls. Unless you take the oath of allegiance to the New World Order, you won't get any
seats. Well, that's the thing, Joel. It's not just reading your book and studying. I live this like you do every day, 18 hours a day. They are really making preparations for this, and they write books admitting a lot of it. And it's so diabolical, but it's really like a scorched earth carpet bombing of society, dumbing everybody down, destroying families. It's just make everything as weak as it can so it submits Antichrist takeover.
That's right. And I think people will, by and large, submit. They will feel totally helpless, especially as they see our military has been taken down. That's the big excuse why we have to go into a militarized New World Order. It's not just, let's join the UN. It's going to be, we have NATO now. We'll form the main military arm, and we've got all these secret weapon systems that we'll turn over to NATO. Well, why didn't you bring those weapon systems out to protect us? Why didn't you use those to stop the
Shut up, traitor, you're arrested.
Why didn't you use those? And that's exactly what they'll say. These people are not supporting our troops. They're undermining our support for this mighty patriotic war. And they'll bring out the vision of the glories of World War II, and that's why they glorify World War II, even though there's a lot of this globalism that was involved in World War II in selling out Eastern Europe and using the name the United Nations 4 years in government documents before it was created. There were globalists operating.
Well, sure, the globalists put Hitler in power. They didn't run him. They put him in power. Right. He wrecks everything while they're funding the Soviets. It's incredible. I mean, that's what's so frustrating about all this. Well, in the 20 minutes or so we have left, Joel Skousen, get into it here for the viewers. Break down more about why they should get the book.
Let me review, Alex, for your listeners, what they can get out of this book, because it is extremely comprehensive. I think perhaps about 50% of my customers asked me, well, what about leaving the country? They want to leave the country. They feel like because our government is the source of a lot of the world problems about globalism that they can escape those by going to the government. So I have in this new edition put into the first section of the book about selecting a safe country. And I talk about the various countries around the world, the global seismic hazards of those, and where you can find freedom in other countries. I talk about specific countries in every major region in the world except Africa, which I give a zero. There really aren't any safe places in Africa. Even South Africa, the freest of the countries right now in Africa, is really under threat. It's going to go the way of Zimbabwe eventually. In Europe, for example, I cover the fact that Spain has traditionally been the safe haven in Europe, because it's the furthest away from the invasion threats that come from the East. And most escapes, as you saw in the movie The Great Escape, have gone through Spain, over the Pyrenees. Spain is a more wide-open country. It has as much surface area and water. Eventually, you got to get out of the country by water, but that's usually possible. Eastern Europe, I have a lot of Eastern Europeans ask me if they can go back to Eastern Europe, and I say no. The fall of the Soviet Union was a carefully crafted deception. They will take over Eastern Europe again, so don't go back there, even though it has the appearance of liberty. And I have a lot of communications with people from Hungary and Czechoslovakia and others who have given me substantial evidence that the current leaders and the leaders ever since the so-called fall of the Soviet Union have in fact been communist puppets and will intend to yield the country back to Russia. But South America gets the most attention from people who are interested in relocation overseas. And South America has traditionally been the best place for Americans. It's cheap living. You have all these expatriates living in Chile and Costa Rica and Argentina and Uruguay, Brazil and Panama, and saying the life is great. You can get everything you want down here. But you have to understand, from the point of view of a person like myself who's lived overseas in Latin America for a total of 2 or 3 years and am fluent in both languages down there, I can tell you that there's a lot of Marxists in these societies. All of the universities are Marxists. They train people to be Marxists and socialists when they come out of it. There's only one free market university, and that's in Guatemala. And it's a very good free market university, the Marroquin University. But everything else is extremely Marxist, even in Chile and Argentina and Uruguay, who are also run by both corrupt countries and coalitions of leftists. Chile's the only country that really still has what you would consider a center-right government, but it has had Marxists in the past ruling it. It had the collapse of the government before and the coup that took place with the communist takeover, there are still Marxists in all of these countries. And what my fear is that even though the life and living is good now, that when the United States is subjected to a third world war and is no longer able to assert power in these countries, the Marxists will take back over, because China and Russia will certainly putting power on their compatriots in Latin America to go with them in their alliance against the West. And I think you're going to see most of Latin America go communist at some future time. It'd be a bad time to try to get back to the United States. One of the conclusions I come to, of course, in the book is that the reason why, even though our government is tyrannical and will continue to oppress us here in this country, there is no other country in the world that has as many potential resistors as the United States, at least 20 million and growing. And even though it's not enough to win back the nation as a whole, it is enough to secure the fact that we will have a great deal of resistance and pockets of liberty that will always exist in this country. So as we go through the book, the most important thing for most people are these color maps that we have in the book. And this is a general reference map of the entire United States. And if I can just give an overview here, this is the most populous area of the United States where the least safety is. The Midwest is the next safe area, but most of the outflow from the East Coast will either go north into Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, or upstate New York, where there is some safety, or it will go westward. And unfortunately, coming out of Florida, almost everybody eventually will have to pour out of Florida, and that puts these other states at risk. And the risk doesn't lower until you get into eastern Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, the Ozarks. These are some moderately safe areas in this country. The northern areas are fairly safe as well, because most flow will not go north. A lot of insects in summer and a lot of cold winter in the weather. And you have the Great Lakes, which of course prevent people from getting up into the Upper Peninsula, one of the better areas in the north central area of the United States. But you don't get into the really great safe areas as a general until you get into what we call the Intermountain West. This is the area in which Jim Rawls, a noted survival expert and good friend, says is the redoubt. This is an area that has good agricultural potential as well as good military resistance potential. But I broaden the area to include the entire Intermountain West here, because if you take, for example, the core in the center of Salt Lake City, which is in itself not a good area, you've got 700 miles of desert separating you from the L.A. Basin. You have about 700 or 800 miles separating you from the Bay Area and from Portland and Seattle. It's just almost impossible for those population centers to get to this area in a complete social collapse. And you even have 500 miles before Denver, filled with a lot of mountains and terrain difficult to cross without gasoline, which will be immediately in short supply in those areas. So even though this is my highest rated area within the United States, still I can find safe areas in every state of the Union if you consider the fact that they may not be safe for the same long-term period as they are in the Intermountain West. I also believe that a lot of the wars which come upon this nation will drive out good people in these high-density population areas, and they too will merge further west. That's the process that I'm hoping will build or change the demographics of America so that it is no longer everyone feeling alone in the major metropolitan areas, but people that are congregating where they can feel as if they are among other fellow libertarians and conservatives and Christians, and that they can band together to control the areas. Now, I might say that there is no state in the State of the Union that has a truly libertarian conservative government. Even the highest rated states of Utah and Idaho still have mainstream, quote, conservative, but mainstream governors who are under the influence of mainstream presses, mainstream newspapers, which try to get them to compromise and not to take extremist views such as defending the state against federal powers. But there are many sheriffs within these areas, and there are powerful legislatures which are in the hands of conservative majorities that continually resist these governors. In contrast, in New York, where you have a liberal governor and a Democratic legislature, or in Connecticut, or in Massachusetts, or in California, or in Illinois, the most corrupt state of the union, these are forces that cannot be overcome by conservatives, even if you get as activist as you want to be. And so ultimately, it's a losing battle in these states where the demographics are against conservatism, and where they're continually receiving an influx more from Latin America, which continues to make towards a more democratic party solution. And so I think you ought to, even those that cannot leave, you have to look forward into the future and say, if I eventually have to leave, where will I go? And sometimes you can make preparations in advance of that. Sometimes you can join forces with friends, with relatives, or church groups, or other things, to have a country retreat someplace that is safe. And you can't mostly, and hardly ever can you make a living in the best retreat places, because to retreat is inversely proportional to population density, and getting a good job and having an income flow is generally directly related to population density. So these kinds of things are almost mutually exclusive. But it's important, if you have the possibility either to retire or to develop a home-based business that is internet-based, which you can run from almost anywhere, then those are the people that have the most important potential in being able to relocate. The individual state maps, and these are some of the national maps that talk about earthquake hazards. So at a glance, you can see where the major earthquake hazards. That doesn't mean that you can't live in these areas. You'll notice that there's significant earthquake hazards in the safest areas of the United States. But it means that you have to take architectural protections against that. And one of the reasons you have a safe room is that when you design them the way that we do in our architectural firm, you design it so that it withstands an earthquake, that it rocks as a complete box, it does not collapse. This is a map that has the various groundwater pollution levels in there. This is a map which is a very important map that everybody can use in the book. This is my example in New Jersey, one of the most dangerous areas in terms of population density, and also has a nuclear target. How do you plan an escape route to get out and avoid the circle freeways that are around here? There's a beltway here, 287, around Newark, going around New York, and it's like a moat. You have to carefully design how you're going to get out of that, because if you try to go through those freeways where there is an exit or an entrance to the freeway, they're going to be clogged with people trying to get on or off the freeways. But there are dozens of routes, which I point out in this detail in the map, which show you how to get under that freeway and how to go through the bypasses, the overpasses or underpasses, which have no exit. It's a very, very important map. You can take this principle into any city. Use Google Maps to zero in satellite view and find out exactly where you have roads going over and under the freeway. On the individual maps, which are extremely useful to people, you have, of course, any major military targets visible, including the surrounding states and the predominant winds, so that you can calculate how much fallout or other things that you have to prepare for. Generally speaking, unless you're on the West Coast, you need to prepare against fallout. There isn't any exception there. Even though some areas may be fallout area, they will be able to, it's just safer to have that. Plus the fact that when you have fallout resistance through at least 12 inches of concrete over the top of a safe room, it also becomes a fireproof room. So if the house burns down or is subject to pillaging and somebody burns it down over you, you can still survive.
And by the way, in the United States, major cities have been almost burned to the ground many times in the 50s and 60s and things. This happens all over the world. Greece, Europe, look at the turmoil they're in. There's a reason government's digging in right now. And let's hope we politically fix America. But the problem is the globalists are so dedicated to this plan of pure domination that I think that's a very low probability, unfortunately. I mean, we're trying to mitigate this as best we can, waken people up. What are the chances, Joel, of turning this around?
I think nationally the chances of turning it around are less than 2%, just because of the power. Remember, they control judges, they control three-fourths of Congress, they control the executive, they control...
What if there was a total political awakening? By total, I mean 60, 70% really.
Let me give you the example of Italy. 1994, total political awakening. They found out that every political party was on the take from the mafia. 100%. Everybody was in kickbacks. Within a year, the powers that be were back in power. Even though they threw all the rascals out and elected new parties, they were the same people putting up new people claiming to be reformers. And they were back under their control within a year. It's almost impossible with the kind of secrecy that governments have to detect when they are lying to you about it. I mean, look at George Bush, proclaimed that he was a Christian and sat there as a skull and bones member and did the globalist bidding throughout his... And look at Eastern Europe. Look at the fall of communism. There's very few Eastern Europe people that saw that, for example, that the follow-on to Ceausescu in Romania was, in fact, a communist who was just faking it. That Vaclav Havel, the great reformer, was, in fact, an agent for the communists. Now, in Poland, Poles all know that Lech Walesa was a communist agent because that's been broadcast, but they didn't know when the fall of the Union happened.
What about Solzhenitsyn?
Solzhenitsyn was a true reformer.
Russian nationalist.
A Russian nationalist, but he was sort of a socialist, too, and that's why he didn't like America. Of course, what he saw in Boston in the East was, you know, a corporate America. It was not true free markets.
Well, he saw the dead culture.
Yes.
And it freaked him out.
It did. But, you know, Sakharov has been, there's certain indications that he has not been really...
Let me bring this up to you. Yeah. What about trying to get the establishment itself? Because I know that I've been able to reach some of the highest levels and actually get people to think for themselves. I mean, this thing ends so evil. I know we are facing an evil force, and the deeper my research gets, I mean, it really is a good versus evil thing. Is there any way to get a 100-year reprieve like Nineveh?
Not unless the nation repented morally, and I don't see that happening. We're moving very rapidly into an immoral society.
Because the system knows immoral is dumb, and dumb can be enslaved.
And immorality also is the gateway to entering the insider system. So you see, as they expand the New World Order to insiders, they want to bring them through the gateway of proving that you have no principles, that you can cheat on your wife, that you can be immoral, that you can hide. And it's just like, as I told, you know, my buddies, my peers who were growing up, I went in the military, they went into the CIA or the FBI, and every one of them told me at some point when they were in a foreign or out-of-town environment, the company, the government paid for prostitutes to come to their hotel rooms. Those that accepted it continued to go up to the system. Those that rejected had their careers capped. They could stay on the white side at a low level.
That's what I wanted to get to before we hit some of the latest news here that ties into all this. White side, dark side. The more I research, and of course that's there historically, but the more I research, you're absolutely right. They literally keep the white side doing all the grunt work, doing all the, you know, running everything.
And the legal work.
Well, the legal work. While the dark side just runs around doing whatever it wants, laughing at the other side. And then whoever's the most evil and cunning goes to the top of the dark side. So they almost use a free market in evil.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like taking over the news. They didn't do this by force. They bought out. They coerced. They hired only liberals. You can't graduate from journalism school as a conservative and get a job anywhere in any newspaper.
And again, even the term liberal, these aren't liberals.
That's right. In fact, the news media isn't purely liberal. It is, in fact, pro-government. It is a shill for government, and that's what people need. The reason it's liberals, because government is liberal. They are Fabian socialist, and they only want, but there is a coercive, a slow coercion that any reporter will tell you if they're honest, that if you go some certain places, the editor will come after you and shut you down and threaten you. You know, you go that way and you won't have a job. And so they don't have to use those threats very often. You know, it's kind of a symbiotic relationship. They can absorb and feel where what will please
the
editor.
Well, and somebody does what they want, they go right to the top.
Yeah, and they see that.
They could just pick out of thousands of people who already fits the shape.
In the military, as an officer, I mean, you only saw yes men go up. And boy, I'll tell you, there was a lot of pressure to say yes because you get a fitness report every 6 months. And if you start bucking the system, if you start complaining that they're just going to waste the money at the end of the year in order to keep the same amount of money for the next year, and they do that in every military squadron, they fly off all the gasoline or all the kerosene.
Fire all the missiles.
You know, they do everything to use it up, and it's just extremely wasteful, and it hurts your conscience. And I spoke out, and I didn't last very long in the military. I spoke out against the wall-to-wall pornography on the walls, and all the military can do, and this is why we have sexual predation. I mean, it's not only tolerated, but it's encouraged, and you look the other way, and even the officers are involved. So you're not going to cure this problem by putting more women in close proximity to these people. These are things which don't give me any optimism that we're going to cure the system. If there was going to be a revival, if there's going to be a greater morality, if there was greater decision, if more whistleblowers were coming out and not being persecuted, I would have hope.
Sure. Well, here's the bottom line. You know, I call it immoral to be a coward. And they sell it like, you know, some of these other issues that are seen as fun, as, oh, that's what's immoral. And they sell the New World Order as fun, but it's only doing this to get control of your life. It's like the Disney analogy of Pinocchio. They get him to do all these bad things because then he turns into a donkey, turns into a slave. What is at the end of the rabbit hole with the New World Order? If they could get everything they wanted, what would they build worldwide if they were in total control? Then I briefly want to get into Benghazi and the different scandals that are going on, how that ties in right now.
Their goal is never to have absolute control. You may be surprised at that, but that is not their goal. To have absolute control, you've got to have communism. And communism doesn't work, and it's unpopular, and it destroys incentive. They are always saddled with the fact that they have to deceive people forever. They have to have effective control. They have to use manipulation, but they have to do it in such a way that people still think they're under democracy. They still will have voting.
Because the devil claims he's giving you free will.
That's right. He's claiming to make you free, but it's controlled freedom. So controlled that, in fact, good cannot prosper. Evil can prosper, but they have to let the middle of the road be blind, prosper, have jobs, be able to switch jobs without total control. But there will be probably about 25% to 30% more control than what we have. They will do suppression for certain religions. They will do suppression for freedom of the internet. There will be this harboring feeling like you're being watched, so that everybody...
The Panopticon.
That's right. And so that no one will feel free to go out and to establish Mises economics, Austrian economics again. Nobody allowed to go there. That'll be tainted. Nobody will go back to the days of Alex Jones when you were free to talk and accuse the government. That'll be treasonous. So there'll be that kind of control. It'll be more like East Germany, but more like West Germany in terms of watching over your shoulder, but more like West Germany and allowing people to have prosperity. And there will be prosperity, but there'll be this circle of citizenship. No one be allowed to have a license to have business or be a professional unless they swear allegiance to the New World Order, take the mark, if you will, and there may be a number, maybe a chip involved in it. That is the mark
of
the beast.
And what's incredible is even if you're not a Christian, if you study the globalist plan, they're following Revelation. And when you get deeper, they say be atheist because they want you blind to it. They really are religious.
That's right. They know. And that's why part of the immunity that I talked about that they guarantee and part of it that is satanic is the promise that you won't face the judgment of God someday.
Well, it's Faustian. When I was stuck in Bohemian Grove, I was there with over 1,500 old men, billionaires, you name it. No one else was ever able to infiltrate and get out by the grace of God. People ask how I did it. It was the grace of God. It was a question by the Secret Service, FBI, you name it. I didn't even really lie to them. I just said, I'm just here visiting. You know, I'm just here with the, you know, here from the Texas delegation. But the old men were grinding their teeth. They were in religious exaltation when this was happening. And the whole ritual was about, we're putting all our sins on this child we're going to burn, and you're going to get away with this. Yeah. And the whole thing was like a ritual, really blasphemy, like they were going through the veil and getting a reprieve.
You know, and if people read Isaiah 14, it's a very interesting non-religious reference. He talks allegorically about all the great men of the earth, the presidents and kings who are in hell, in chains, waiting for he that was going to thrash the world to come and save them. I think that's an allegorical view, a visionary view of the promises Satan makes to the great men and the powerful who have these revelatory pacts with Satan, the Faustian pact, if you will. The promise that you won't suffer for your sins either on this earth life or in the afterlife.
They're cowards.
And they're waiting for Satan to come down and fulfill his promise. And then he descends in chains and they say, art thou become one of us? It's a very graphic, view. It's rather clouded in allegory.
But how do they not know that the creator of the universe is where all the power is at? How do they not fall on their knees before the obvious spirit of it?
Well, in the first place, it's wishful thinking. I mean, when you've got as many sins as these people do, and they've all had tremendous sins, they love to believe in this. They want to believe because they fear. I mean, Bill Clinton knows about judgment. He was raised a Christian. George Bush knows that. But he wants to believe in the promises of the Illuminati that we can save you from judgment. They want to believe it. It's not going to happen. But as Isaiah saw in the 14th chapter, every one of those came in, were waiting to be saved by he who was promising to come and save them.
I just don't even get it. I mean, you can see the fruits of the New World Order. It is not something you want to serve. I mean,
but you look at the people right now. I mean, look at Timothy Geithner. He got saved from a tax evasion charge. He got immunity. Look at Bill Clinton. He got off the hook. He's a famous man.
Look at Warren Buffett. Hundreds of billions of taxpayer money.
You can't tell me that they can't see the fruits of it. To them, the fruits are all
good. But that's the God of this world.
That's right. And it won't last. But they don't see it now. And they see that as their only way out because right now they're looking at judgment. They're looking at prosecution. We control the surveillance machinery of the United States specifically to preserve our immunity. Even if Ron Paul got elected to president, he would never be able to penetrate the surveillance and get them to turn and tap the phones of the power elite to get the evidence to prosecute them. He'd never get it. They just simply say, we tapped their phones and there's nothing. They'd lie to them.
Or they'd say Ron Paul tapped them without warrants.
That's right. And they'd blow the whistle.
They would use their own.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you see, I'm pessimistic in about winning this through the mechanism of politics. This is very important. I'm not optimistic about winning it through electing a Republican or even a Ron Paul, even though I would fight for Ron Paul because you could do so much to convert the world through having a voice for liberty.
But they
would destroy that figure. And he knew himself and told me, he said, I fear I'd be assassinated by them. But I'm trying to say that all is not lost. I wouldn't be doing this work on strategic relocation. I wouldn't be putting myself out front instead of laying it low as the editor of World Affairs Brief or being on your show even if I wanted to not bring the government upon me. They'll come after me. They'll come after you someday. But I'm still optimistic because if we're doing what's right, if we're defending liberty, we've got the protection of God. And if we go down, it's because we're serving a higher purpose. And so I'm not afraid of that.
If we go down, it's part of God's plan.
That's right. But we're going to do some good in the process, I'm hopeful of doing it, hoping to wake some people up. But there is, I know that God will not allow all liberty to die. He will never allow that. There will always be pockets. There will always be a resistance. And we may well have a resistance after a collapse, but it certainly will not be without a collapse because there's never been a time in history where people have resurrected themselves from tyranny and from sin without repentance, and that repentance always comes through hardship.
That's right. We have to go through the fire first.
We have to go through the fire adversity. I'm not a believer of the Cadillac rapture, running down the freeway, everything's hunky-dory, and the second coming comes and releases. I'm a believer of the second coming after we go through the tribulation, after we prove our mettle, after we show God that we have suffered and done what's right, listen to the promptings of conscience that guide us, that lead us to safety. That's what we need to do.
Well, you can see society out there. It just has a nihilistic death wish. People are just reveling in buying into lies. And people badmouth the United States so much, and we've had a terrible history. But compared to others, we've had a great history. And there has been a special fire of liberty in the hearts of men in this nation and their souls. And, it's my hope, exactly as you just said, to put the truth out like a pebble in a pond, and then as things get worse, that's actually as people listen. So even though the enemy has great power, when it finally forces everything down, that's when people will go, oh, and remember ancient seeds planted way before we were even born, and then seeds we've planted.
That's right. They will remember that Alex Jones predicted that he was right. And even though he was ridiculed and vilified, confiscation of guns will come someday. And concentration camps will come and people realize you were right. And so that will convert them. Now, whether or not they've got time then to do anything, if they've waited that long, that's why my message in strategic relocation is be wise beforehand.
That's right. And also culturally be aware of this and explain to your children there's a false culture, all of it. And then they will see it for themselves. It's not like you're indoctrinating your children. The state does that. You're just showing them how to see, unlocking their mind. We've only got 3 or 4 minutes left. WorldAffairsBrief.com, the book, the DVD film, all available at InfoWarsStore.com to support our work. But Joel, in closing, just spend 5 minutes on Benghazi, on the things that are currently happening, the IRS scandals, all of it, you know, as people watch on this Monday night.
Well, there are 4 scandals that are plaguing this administration. I think they're accidental. I don't think there were purposeful leaks because they're desperately trying to make them go away. Trying to make the Benghazi go away by diverting it only to the minor aspects of Benghazi about whether or not the administration misrepresented.
The Republicans are helping cover
That's right, and they are helping because the testimony they had before Congress has been mentioned that there was a stand-down order given, and it's amazing there have been no follow-up questions.
Sure, you go up the chain.
That's right. You can follow. In investigation, you can petition. You can subpoena Colonel Gibson to come in and said, who gave you out of AFRICOM, because it wasn't General Hamm. He got relieved for not going forward with the stand-down order. He wouldn't do it. Somebody else took his place and called you. Who was that person? And then bring him in. And who told you to stand down? Now, that will tell you, and that's why you'll never learn, because that will tell you that Obama didn't give the order.
And that's why they want to go to drones and robots that are autonomous, because they're so sick of even their own hand-picked generals have done it, and finally wouldn't sit there and watch their own people killed.
That's right. The IRS scandal of Obama is a big thing, because there's no way to work around that. It happened. It's been happening for decades. It's out in the open. Heads have got to roll. They've rolled. So far, nobody's satisfied, because the people who are really in charge of the thing, like Sue Ingram, is still at the IRS.
They've had IRS people come out and say, orders come from the top.
Come
from
the very top. And so the military scandal about 26,000 rapes every year in the military is not going away. It's not going to get better. They're going to have more sensitivity training, but it's not going to do any good. And especially as they bring, you know, gays and homosexuals in, this is going to be more predation in that regard as well. And the AP scandal is never going away because the government is surveilling everything. And they are putting the world on notice and the journalists on notice that, in fact, the government is tapping their phones. And it is putting a chilling effect on the reporters. They complain now that nobody wants to talk to us.
Oh, the president of the AP said that today.
Nobody wants to talk to us because they know there's no such thing as anonymity anymore.
Oh, but I thought it was a conspiracy we were being spied on.
And yet the and the media will not say it's a conspiracy.
Briefly, tell that story about you in 83.
Well, in 1983, I was sitting in my office as chairman of the Conservative National Committee, and I was warning my overseas compatriots, free market, people trying to start new political parties in El Salvador and Guatemala around the U.S. thing, about a particular Army Reserve major who was claiming to be their friend but worked too high in government. I was saying, don't trust him, don't get too close. This was on the telephone. Within 15 minutes, he was in front of my desk saying, don't you ever talk or mention my name on the telephone anymore. Within 15 minutes. That means they were listening full time to my telephone and immediately telephoned him, told him about it, and he was stupid enough to come and tell me, alerting me to the fact that government was surveilling everything even.
Now, we've had it with whistleblowers. And I don't know if this is a chilling effect. People need to be warned. They've blown almost every person except people that sent us mailed info and then with points to check. And it is incredible. I mean, I'm talking about clergy response team would send me stuff, and 5 days later, the feds would be in their office. And it was like, tell your flock gun confiscation is good, take vaccines, the families, take the crosses out of your churches. I mean, it is. They really hate Christians. Like, do you think it's trying to stir up Christians now with, like, the Fox News report about, oh, all Catholics are terrorists and all evangelicals are terrorists? And I think it had Mormons in there. I mean, it's just bizarre that they would be that obvious.
And they're trying to bait people on our side. I think that's what the 2 billion bullets was. There's no way that DHS can use 2 billion bullets. It's to bring out those that will be upset by it. They're taking names. And so we've got to be very, very careful how we not allow ourselves to be provoked into things that are unwise with government releasing information that we appear, oh, that's great, and we can jump on this. But we've got to be careful because they are setting traps. One of the most important things that we've talked about strategic relocation is this issue of war. I want people to know, though, that I'm watching this very carefully. Alex is watching this very carefully. We hope, at least through my World Affairs brief, if people subscribe to that, that I can warn them. I'll be watching when the Russians and Chinese are getting close. There will be signs. I think the trigger event for World War III is going to be North Korea attacking South Korea. When you see that happen...
You've been saying that for years.
Yeah, we may be weeks or days away from World War III because China will use that as an excuse to come in and nuke the West, and Russia will come in to support that.
And the communist Chinese have said, we don't care if you kill half our population.
We're tired
of taking care of them.
That's right.
Well, listen, this has been a very powerful interview. Joel Skousen, worldaffairsbrief.com. Don't go. I want to say bye to you here at the end of the show. Thank you so much. Folks, you need to get this book at InfoWarsStore.com. Support his work, my work. But more importantly, you need to get informed yourself. And by reading it and going over it, it'll get your mind in that place to think about this. They're both discounted together. The film that's close to 3 hours all total with the film and the extras, and the book constantly updated, the third edition, available at InfoWarsStore.com. And your purchases, again, fund our true, in the face of the New World Order media operation. So I want to thank Jakari Jackson for doing the news portion. Marcos Morales, David Knight, Rob Dew, Darren McBreen, and, of course, Leanne McAdoo, and so many other people we're not even mentioning here tonight. You, the viewers, our sponsors, everybody, we could not do this without you. But InfoWarsStore.com, InfoWarsStore.com, strategic relocation. Put it on access television in your area. Show it to your church. Get the book. Show it to people. So that folks that are awake will be many, really light years ahead of the general public. If we're unable offensively to change this to the point of defeating them, then defensively we're going to have a large remnant who really knows how serious it is after all this takes place. And it's come out in the news that foreign governments... You know, in emails the British have leaked, you know, listen and watch our show. Because, look, we make a full-time study of this, a full-time focus. We know what the think tanks know, but we're from the other angle. And they've been arrogant about their program, thinking you're so stupid. They brag about a lot of these plans publicly. You know, like Kissinger and the new WikiLeaks said, we do the illegal now, the unconstitutional later. The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, they ridicule it constantly because it is a hedge against them of common sense, common law. So the answer is restore that, discredit the system, restore the republic, and we'll have a future. But just living your life, taking care of your family, being a good person is a bulwark against their evil. And trying to reach out to others who are under this control also will turn things around. So again, Joel Skousen, thanks a million for being with us. And that's it for this edition of InfoWars Nightly News, brought to you by viewers like you out there. And we will be back, Lord willing, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Central at PrisonPlanet.tv.